Now, before I introduce the next speaker, I just wanted to say thank you again to the delegation from Monaco, the people from Monaco coming into the room as far as I could see from the back. And in particular, I just want to, since we are now going into the IGY, to welcome two persons especially in this audience, because we have two veterans who were in the Antarctic 50 years ago, namely Yoshi Yoshida from Japan and John Barron from the US. And that may be especially appropriate when we have the next talk, which is going to be given by Cornelia Lidecker from Germany. She is, as you will see in the papers, involved with history in various kinds. She now is the chair of the SCARS Action Group on History of Antarctic Science. She's a meteorologist by training and then become interested both in meteorological history and not least the history of German polar exploration. Cornelia, please, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I want to start my talk referring to the first International Polar Year, which was organized by the International Meteorological Committee, which established a commission for the polar year. The aim was to have simultaneous meteorological and magnetic measurements for the improvement of weather forecast and navigation. We see the group picture of the most distinguished people working with the polar year, with Georg von Neumayr, who was one of the leading figures. During the first polar year, 12 stations had been established all around the Arctic, and two more stations were established on the southern hemisphere in Cape Horn and on South Georgia. As you see on the picture, the Antarctic region was a no-no. Nobody really knew what it was. It was very much regretted after the polar year that there was no central bureau organizing everything, organizing, collecting the data, and even organizing a joint publication. So this was done by the nations themselves. I want to come back to the north, to Spitsbergen, or the archipelago of Spitsbergen, now called Svalbard. Around 1894, coal mining started with a British mining place called Advent City. Then the American came, the Norwegians, the Sweden, and even the Russians came until the First World War. This was in the far north, but on the southern hemisphere, really nobody knew what was it, a continent or something else, like a southern ice ocean, as you can see here on the German map. During the 6th International Geographical Congress, which took place in London, the audience said that the exploration of the Antarctic regions is the greatest piece of geographical exploration still to be undertaken. And the General Assembly recommends that the scientific societies throughout the world should urge, in whatever way seems to them most effective, that this work should be undertaken before the close of the century. And then we have 50 years, which went very rapidly until the International Geophysical Year. The Belgians were the first to set up an expedition, the Belgica expedition, which went to the Antarctic Peninsula and made a very detailed survey of the islands and the channels in between. And it was an international expedition with Roald Amundsen among the seamen. And Frederick Cook was the medical doctor of the expedition. And it was the first to overwinter in Antarctic water. The ship was trapped by ice. And they took the first meteorological measurements throughout the year. But on the next geographical congress, which took place in Berlin in 1899, it was Clemens Markham, the president of the Royal Geographical Society in England. He divided what he thought the Antarctic continent might be. He divided it like a big cake into four pieces. One half of the cake which is in red, should be the British working area all around the Ross Sea. And the other part, the blue one, would be the German working area. But it was already well known that the German expedition would enter Antarctica at about 90 degrees east. And the most interesting thing about this Congress in Berlin was that they made an agreement of international meteorological and magnetic cooperation according to the program of the first polar year. And due to this, finally, four expeditions went south. It was the German expedition under Erich von Drygalski, Robert Falcon Scott's first expedition, and then we had the Swedish expeditions of Otto Nordenskjöld to the Antarctic Peninsula, and finally the Scott expedition from William Spears Bruce. And also, the Bureau of the Geographical Congress in Berlin organized an international meteorological cooperation of all ships sailing south of 30 degrees. They should take down notes of their meteorological observations and send them to Berlin. So Berlin became the focal point of this cooperation. But as you can see, one of the results, the daily weather maps, it was very hard with this few data to connect, for instance, the South America with the Antarctic Peninsula with isolines and isotherms. It was only this place where it was possible to connect Antarctica with the further north. The first results of these four cooperating expeditions were presented at the International Congress of World Economy in Mons in Belgium. And it's very interesting that Lecointe, he was the captain of the very first Belgian expedition to Antarctica. He wanted to start the initiative to establish an international association of polar research, because at that time nobody knew what's on the North Pole, what's on the South Pole. So this would be the main aim of this association. And Axtowski, Henrik Axtowski, he was in charge of the physical measurements of the Belgian expedition. He wanted to focus more on Antarctica, to send out more geographically orientated expeditions, which should set up stations to overwinter there, and in summertime they should have expeditions to the interior of the unknown Antarctica. And in the end, there was a recommendation to the Belgian government to set up or to organize an international congress for the study of polar regions, which took place in 1907. And then they discussed the setup of a polar commission, which finally was set up in 1908 with Otto Nordenskjöld, who was the leader of the Swedish expedition to Antarctica of the International Cooperation. He became vice president, and Lecointe, the captain of the Belgica, became the secretary general. So they had their experiences to bring in. But unfortunately, just after that, there was a race to the North and to the South Pole, which had been visited twice, so this aim was already achieved. However, there was an official, finally, inauguration of this so-called International Polar Commission in 1913 with Nordenskjöld as vice president and now with Robert Peary as secretary general, who had been on the North Pole. Now I want to come back to Svalbard. At that time, around 1910, the German Graf Zeppelin, Baron Zeppelin, had developed his airship quite nicely, that he got the idea to use the airship to investigate the unknown Arctic region from above. But before he could introduce his airship to do this, it would be good to have a study expedition to Svalbard to get more information about meteorology. So they went to the west coast On the left picture, you see a manned balloon ascent, and they found out that they had much too less meteorological information to start safe airshipped routes over there. And due to this, Hugo Hergesel, who was a well-known aerologist at that time, raised the money to establish a German geophysical observatory, which was first set up in Advent City and then moved to the north to Ebeltoft-Hamna, where they undertook meteorological and aerological investigations of the upper air with balloons and kites on a permanent basis. And at the same time, Svalbard was a coal mining island, and many claims were made for coal mining. And also Norway got very much interested in the island when it became, or when it had separated from Sweden. So it was looking for new resources. And due to this, there were already ideas about having a Norwegian, Swedish, and Russian administration of all this, because at that time, Svalbard didn't belong to anybody. Then we had the First World War and the Treaty of Versailles. And in connection with the Treaty of Versailles, a Svalbard Treaty was made, giving Norway the sovereignty over Svalbard. And it's very important that the demilitarization and equal rights for economic exploitation was one of the main points of the treaty, and also the peaceful utilization. But also there was very much emphasis on research, and also they mentioned that there should be an international meteorological observation or station established there. And in consequence of this, Norway, the Norwegian government gave more money for exploration of the interior of Svalbard, and also they established this Norwegian Polar Institute. And also very interesting, another thing came up. The German Walter Bruns wanted to establish a transarctic airship route connecting Berlin with San Francisco or with Tokyo all around the Pacific. But also for this, a feasibility study was needed. And it was very, very interesting that they used an international society for the exploration of the Arctic regions by means of aircraft. And on purpose, they asked Fridtjof Nansen to become president, because at that time Germany was not a member of the International Research Council, and this Aeroarctic, which was a short nickname for this society, was the first society in which Germany and Russia and all the other nations came together. And they had this journal Arctis to promote the idea. And this is the structure of the Aeroarctic. We have the council of the society, of course, with the president, vice president, treasurer, and so on and so on. And then we have a board of the exploration council and the representatives of the biggest national councils. Then we have the general assembly, which consisted about 400 members. It was a status of 1931, and additional 42 bodies. And then we had the Exploration Council, which consisted of 4 technical commissions and 7 scientific commissions, which prepared and organized the expedition with the airship. This expedition took place within 5 days in 1931 to the Russian Arctic, and due to this, it had been very crucial to have many Russian members to support this expedition. So we had about 30% of German members within the Aeroarctic, 20% of Russian members, and 12% of American members. But after the publications of the date and further ideas to continue, the crash of the Hindenburg finished the idea. It had been abandoned, and in the course also the Era Arctic was dissolved. Now I have to mention the second polar year from 1932 to 1933 in connection with the Era Arctic, because there had been a certain overlap of memberships. 7 members of the Era Arctic, especially 4 members of the Council of the Era Arctic, had been members in the Commission Internationale de l'Année Polaire, which was a part of the International Meteorological Organization. And this commission only had 12 members, and 7 of them had been of the Era Arctic. This is an indication that the Era Arctic was very much connected and put in their ideas to other organizations. And even if we go back, we can see that Arctowski and Ewert Everding, had been members of the International Polar Commission of 1906 to 13. And later on, Everding became the president of the International Meteorological Organization, and he was in the Council of the Era Arctic. Now I come back to Antarctica. In the 1930s, whaling became a very big deal in Antarctica. We have the big factory ships and the catching boats. So the economic interests turned from the north to the south. And also, many scientific expeditions went to Antarctica. You see here the Bird expedition, which started from Little America, investigating the interior of Antarctica. And then I have an example from the German Schwabenland expedition, which discovered Neuschwabenland and had this huge aerial survey. Here you see an inside sketch in one of the pictures. This was all done to have some material for future claims. Especially the German wanted to secure their own whaling. And also in this connection, I want to mention that Argentine put forward a claim on the Antarctic Peninsula in 1937, which went back to the old Treaty of Tordesillas of the 15th century, saying that every country west of Brazil should be Spanish and east of it should be Portuguese. On the other hand, the Chilean had the geological argument put forward in 1940 that the Antarctic Peninsula is an extension of the Andes, and the Andes are in Chile, so the Antarctic Peninsula should belong to Chile. On the other hand, the British put forward or organized this Operation Tabarin even during the Second World War to preserve their existing rights on the Falkland Island and South Georgia as well as the Antarctic Peninsula. And this is called the ABC problem. After the World War, the Second World War, the Cold War came. And Admiral Byrd organized the United States Antarctic Development Project, which we know as Operation High Jump, which was a training program for 4,700 soldiers. And you see all the lines, which were the survey that they did all along the Antarctic coast, which was followed up by the Operation Windmill to strengthen their possible American claims. And soon after that, there was an American secret draft of agreement on Antarctica for 10 countries to become a member, which said there should be no territorial claim and that there should be an Antarctic Commission, but definitely without Russia included. And this commission should set up a government with one member for each country, which should have a scientific board, and this scientific board should work together with the United Nations and other international scientific bodies. For exploration and scientific investigation, and especially for international peace and security. On the other hand, we have this Norwegian, British, Swedish expedition, which was a real three-partied expedition and a very good cooperation. It took place west of the German-discovered Neuschwabenland in Dronning-Mordland, and it carried through many important disciplines, including air photography. And then I only want to mention the International Geophysical Year, which at this time was organized by ICSU, the International Council of Scientific Unions, and they invited the International Meteorological Organization. And the aim was finally to have a network all around Antarctica, including now to investigate the ionosphere and the outer space. And now I come to my summary, which is here in the survey pictures. You can see that there had been the polar years. The first one was a model of the International Meteorological and Magnetic Organization. And we had the attempt, which really did not came into function, like the International Polar Commission or the idea of having this Antarctic Commission. And we have the Aeroarctic. And you see that there was a certain networks of, you can say that the experience that one had gave over to the next organization, and especially the close relationship between the Aeroarctic and the second polar year. And also you see the example of Svalbard, where we had mining and claims and science all together, and this was put together into the Svalbard Treaty, and which allowed further mining and science. But as you can see by the red line, I think there is a gap between the time before the end of the World War and then a new time during the Cold War. So before, there was a certain sphere or community to work on different projects, and then we have a new generation with established these Norwegian, British, and Swedish expedition, and then we had the polar year. On the International Geophysical Year, we will hear more during the next days. And here I finish my talk, and thank you for listening on my ideas on parallel agendas of the International Geophysical Year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Connie. And as with the previous speaker, I have a great pleasure on behalf of the organizers to give you their medal.